Welcome back to Talking to Grandma. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. In today's episode, we chatted with Tamar Lawrence Samuel about growing up speaking three languages and how she's working on passing on heritage languages to her daughter in a multilingual, multicultural home. Tamar is a dear friend of mine. Our children were born literally just weeks apart. In addition to being an amazing mother, she is also an activist and strategist, creating an impact all over the globe. She has organized large-scale change for social justice across continents, from climate justice at the United Nations to creating integrated and strategic planning initiatives with organizations in the U.S. She is currently the lead program designer at Onward, a Berlin Rosen organization that empowers high-impact partners to create inclusive environments. In today's episode, you'll get an inside look at what it looks like to try and raise multilingual children while holding all of the other complexities of life. Tamar and I could talk about our parenting journey and her aspirations of raising a quadrilingual child for hours. Luckily for you, we didn't. I hope you are as encouraged as I was by our conversation with her. You are certainly in for a treat today. Tamar, welcome, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here and to talk about some of the stuff that we talk about and think about a lot.
Yeah. We definitely have had these conversations a lot offline, and I wanted to bring it online just to share that conversation with other folks who may be in this same multilingual parenting journey and share our experiences and share that it looks differently for different people and different families. And there's so many different ways to go about it. I know you yourself had a really distinct experience that may be different from that of your child. So I wanted to start there. What was your own language preservation journey? You grew up multilingual, right?
Yes, I grew up speaking three languages at home and speaking three languages like together, like mixed together pretty fluidly from like the age of a few months. The first stories about my like language and speech development, I think, date back to when I was like 3 or 4 months old. My mom tells these stories of like, by the time I was 7 months old, I was saying 5-word sentences, but in three languages, and or 4-word sentences in three languages. And if I added a fifth word, I would have to drop another. Like I couldn't do 5, but I could do 4. I grew up in Geneva, Switzerland, with a parent from the United States and a parent from Eritrea and East Africa. And so, you know, I sort of didn't have a choice but to speak multiple languages because my mom, I think, very uniquely, you know, moved to Ethiopia with my dad when they first met and spent a few years there learning Amharic and learning to read and write Amharic, which is the like sort of notable part of it because Amharic has a whole different alphabet. And so knowing that like she had done that made it almost like impossible not to try, right? And not to like make it a priority in our home to learn different languages. And it also set an example, right? The fact that like she moved halfway across the world by herself at a very young age. I won't say how old she was, but she was like barely an adult and learned a whole new language and a whole new alphabet. But it also made it easier at home because we had two parents who spoke all of the languages that we learned. So we grew up speaking French because we were in Switzerland and France. We grew up speaking Amharic from Ethiopia, and we grew up speaking English because it was sort of the lingua franca, the language that everybody spoke and that people worked in and all of that. My dad is from Eritrea, but I learned Amharic from Ethiopia, which might be confusing. And the reason is that Ethiopia and Eritrea for a long time were one country. We're all part of Ethiopia, and Eritrea became independent when I was little. But when my mom moved to the region, she moved to the capital of Ethiopia. And so she learned Amharic from Ethiopia. So sometimes it also feels funny that I speak Amharic, which is one of the languages of the region that I'm from, but not the language of the country that I'm from. So that's a little bit unique as well.
Yeah. So Amharic in Geneva must not have been like a language that you were surrounded by outside of your family environment. And it wasn't your mother's first language either. So how did they manage to keep
that language alive in the family and interest in it and just kind of being able to pass that on, because that's really hard when you're not surrounded by it all of the time or by other speakers outside of your family.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, the second largest community of expats from Ethiopia in the world is Geneva. I think the largest is Washington, D.C. And the second largest is Geneva, or at least it was at the time. So actually, there was a lot of Amharic spoken, and there was a large sort of Ethiopian, Eritrean, Abyssinian community. But I'm not sure that we were like that plugged into it. Like my parents had a couple of friends from Ethiopia that we would get together with, and we spoke it with them. But the major reason that it was a priority in our house and that it was sort of, you know, that I learned it early on was because, one, because my mom knew it, two, because my dad's mom was there when I was born and stayed for several months into my early childhood. So that she spoke Amharic and she spoke almost exclusively Amharic. So that made it like, you know, easier to sort of absorb naturally because Amharic was being spoken around me primarily, I would say, in the home. And then the third reason is we had like nanny who lived with us who from Ethiopia who spoke Amharic with me as well. So that was like, Amharic was actually like solidly my first strongest language when I started to speak in, you know, sentences longer than five words. And, but by the age of one, I sort of had already begun to like forget. So I would like go to the United States for the summer to spend the summer with family. And I would come back and I wouldn't speak anything but English anymore. Like I had forgotten everything else. And then I would come home and I would go back to like school and my life. And then I would only speak French and forget everything else. So every few months I would forget entirely, like an entire language, but somehow not subconsciously, right? Like it was there somewhere in the back of my mind. And so eventually all three became pretty like solidified.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up because I think I see that a lot in my son who speaks Danish, English, and Spanish. And when he goes to his grandparents' home in Denmark and he's with them for the week and then he comes back, it feels like he's lost a lot of Spanish. And it maybe, you know, you can frame it that way, but also I think his brain just needs time to make a shift back to using Spanish with me. Or if we're with my family in the U.S. who speaks English, taking time to shift to using more English, because you have those kind of grooves in your brain that stay there that maybe are not getting as deep if you're not using them, but they're still there. And when you start activating them again, then you can access them. And as you grow older, then you have a little bit more flexibility amongst with the different languages. And then also, if you don't use them, like I find myself, if I'm not using one of my languages for a while, then you lose that too. So it's really a matter of understanding the fluidity of it.
And it's so interesting because it might, in the short term, it might feel like a little bit of a loss, like even with Anton, that he might be like forgetting his Spanish. But I think with the way you described it made me think of like a muscle, right? Like the more you switch, the more you have to do that like mental flexibility exercise of like speaking Danish only for a week and then coming home and being immersed back into, you know, other languages, the more you exercise that muscle and that fluidity of switching back and forth between the languages that you speak gets more and more solidified and more, you know, fluent. And then you get to the point in your like, you know, when you're a little bit older and like your language is more established where switching is like not even a thing. You don't even think about it, right? You're like constantly switching.
Yeah. Was the process of learning three languages the same for you and your siblings, or did it look different?
So our caretaker who lived with us when I was very little, left when my siblings were pretty young still. And so my language skills were like very settled and set by then. But my younger siblings, who are 5.5 years younger than I am, and they're twins, theirs weren't as settled. And so and then, you know, there was some like trauma involved in the situation. And for my mother, I think like a bit of like a rejection of Amharic and the language as a result of the like drama that happened. And so Amharic was spoken a lot less in our home after she left. And so it was one fewer people speaking it, because she was, you know, by virtue of her absence, my mom speaking it a lot less because she just like wasn't into it and didn't want to speak it anymore because it was associated with memories she didn't want to think about. And then like, you know, defaulting to other languages like English or French, which was the local language. And so my siblings had a very different connection and experience of, you know, early language and early Amharic. And so they, to this day, you know, they're in their early to mid 30s. I think they would say they don't speak Amharic really. And I'm not even sure that they really understand it very well. On the flip side, they, as a result, I think of like my parents feeling like they didn't do them justice, they got Amharic lessons. And so the two of them can read and write the alphabet. I'm completely illiterate, but they don't know what they're reading. And so it takes, we always joke that it takes like two Lawrence Samuel siblings, or at least the right combination of two, to like make sense of things in Amharic, because they can read the signs and I can tell them what they mean. And it's true, you know, they have a very different relationship to it. And they recently traveled back to Ethiopia, together with a bunch of our cousins. And I think felt very intensely sort of resentful of the fact that they didn't have the language skills they wished they had in the time, at the time and in that space to be able to like fully experience the place and the culture. And, you know, this is totally off topic, but like on the flip side, my family opted not to go with our cousins because we're a same-sex couple and that is not welcome and accepted. And so they got to go and didn't get to fully experience, and we didn't even get to go, or we opted not to go for our own sort of safety. So culture and language are so interesting and intertwined and like have such a big impact on your life, you know, and your identity, I think.
Yeah. And that's really tough, wanting to be able to experience that and share that with your daughter, but not being able to, because your safety is number one priority, and having to figure out other ways to integrate and bring that culture into your home. I thought it was really interesting what you mentioned around like your siblings and the like resentment maybe that they felt on that visit back around not knowing Amharic. And I resonated with that a lot, because I think growing up, I felt like I just should have known Spanish. Like my parents should have taught it to me, and really kind of carried that of like, oh, they spoke Spanish. They should have just, you know, done it, as if it was an easy thing to just pass on a whole nother language in an English dominant society to a child. And then as I got older, I started to shift that thinking and be kinder to them, because I needed to be kinder to myself when I was passing on Spanish to my son, to say like, whatever I give him is good enough, is better than nothing. And what my parents gave me was good enough and better than nothing. And we are doing the work of language preservation here. And so that also was a mindset shift that I had to get into, that came with parenthood and didn't come with, being a daughter, which now having a child, I understand that the child's focus is on themselves a lot of the time and not externally towards their parents.
It's similarly, I think it's two things. It's first, it's like letting perfection get in the way of like just doing as much or as little as you possibly can. And that goes for everything in life, right? Like I haven't exercised in weeks. That's okay. Like whatever exercise I do, when I do it, is better than nothing. But there's like, for me, there's a balancing act of like giving myself grace, but also holding myself accountable. I find that I haven't yet quite cracked the like, whatever the trick is, or the like the method is that I'm going to be able to like hold on to for the long term and hold myself accountable to, for actually being disciplined about speaking other languages to her. And I think I like, you know, sometimes I feel like she has two parents who speak a number of languages and some languages in common, which makes it easier, right? So Tali and I both speak French. We both speak Haitian Creole. She obviously much better than I do, but you know, I can like comprehend and follow along and I can say some things, and I spent enough time in Haiti and, you know, I speak French, which makes it easier. But then I'm the only one who speaks Amharic. And so I feel like it would be in some ways more practical and easier if we tackled French first together. And then I feel torn because I feel like, well, if we do that, then we're deprioritizing Amharic and you know, that's like not fair. And I feel like even this sense of like almost like choosing one parent, one of my parents over the other, one culture over the other. And I think that the problem with that is that it puts me in like this state of paralysis where I'm not doing either. And then it's just worse all around. Right. And the person who loses is Thais. And so I think the most important thing I need to do is like shift my mindset in the same way that you're talking about in it to tell myself and to reassure myself and to remind myself that any little bit is better than nothing. And, you know, I can try different approaches and this and that, but like just doing it, whatever it is, speaking any and every language to her is better. And not to like get too caught up with like, you know, if I never had this worry that she would like mix languages or be confused. I know people hear that a lot and people say that a lot. I experienced total and utter confusion and chaos in our house with languages, and it was never an impediment to learning all of them. So I don't really think that's a thing, but I think like not worrying about having it be like a very linear process and not overthinking like the process itself and like what language and at what time and, you know, like, are they on par with each other in terms of progress and all those kinds of things. So just like getting over that and just making, you know, using some strategies like one parent, one language, or like, you know, having different moments of the day be, you know, be sort of anchored around one language, or, you know, so we used to do like meal times in French and like, but I think now I need to make a shift and like actually dedicate myself and be super disciplined about just speaking to her in Amharic and having Tali just speak to her either in French or in Creole. And then we'll like build in the rest. And I also know that like brain development wise, the more languages that kids learn the earlier on, the more aptitude for languages they will have in the course of their life. So there's like no downside to it. But the thing I struggle with the most is like the discipline, because it's so hard to like, I will start a meal with her in French and like by sentence four, I'm back to English and I've totally forgotten. So
yeah.
That's the biggest struggle for me.
Yeah. And I think, well, first, just to kind of bring the audience along, because I feel like this is definitely a conversation that we've had before. But for our audience, Tali is your partner and Thais is your daughter. And so you're talking about kind of all of the different languages in that family structure. And I think when you're mentioning like the discipline, I also wonder, Tamar, like, if it's also maybe the like routine of it rather than the discipline, because for our family, I feel like we've gotten into a routine of multilingualism, probably a lot of what you mentioned of your home environment growing up, of having different languages at different times. And it was really hard at the beginning to speak to my son only in Spanish because English is my dominant language. So it took a while to get used to that. And I think of it more as a routine rather than discipline, because sometimes I switch to him in English when I don't know how to say something in Spanish. Or sometimes, you know, now Anton speaks a lot more English and understands it a lot more. So we'll have a lot more flexibility and fluidity in that. And so I think of it of like just kind of getting used to it, because it's not maybe what your like home unit has looked like. Before you had Thais, you and Tali talked to each other in English, and then you had Thais, and maybe you continue to talk to each other in English. And so maybe it just takes a while to get used to what the different structures would look like.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I think like with everything, you know, it takes a while to create new habits, but the key is just to like keep repeating it until you get there. You know, just hearing you talk about it sort of made it feel less overwhelming somehow. And I feel like we could easily, like Tali and I could just, like, we speak French to each other all the time, but it's mostly like our, you know, like our secret language when we want to talk when there are other people around. Or when we want to talk about Thais when she's there, because it's still enough of a, like, she doesn't fully comprehend. Although, you know, 80% of the time I would say she's like, what are we going to do about this? Which is the topic we were just talking about. And we're like, maybe she does understand more than we thought. But I think we could pretty easily just, Tali and I speak French consistently to each other. And then I could just speak Amharic to Thais. And I think just like getting into that habit will be super helpful. And I think it's like, I think I'm like a cold turkey kind of person. And I feel like I just need to make the switch rather than like, I think that like different activities in different languages is useful and good when it's happening, but like it's less of a radical switch. And so it takes longer to like make that habit, form that habit. So I think that's my new strategy. Just Amharic with Thais and French with Tali, so that Thais, when she's with both of us, gets that. And then that way she gets both, exposure to both.
Oh, you're going to be in trouble when she learns all of the languages. You're going to be, you won't have any more languages to turn to. Like my husband, Anis, and I have that situation where English used to be our secret language because our son spoke Spanish and Danish. And now he understands everything that we say in English. And there are points where we're just like staring at each other in front of him being like, I don't know how to like check your phone. I'm going to text you.
That's exactly. Yeah. And like in 1 year, he'll be reading your text messages. So that'll be sign language is next.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about like you have been doing things to expose Thais to the different languages and not just the languages, like cultures that she comes from, because she has a very rich multicultural background. So what have you been doing to like help her feel connected to the language and culture that she comes from?
So we do a lot of things. She spends a lot of time with Tali's mom, who's Haitian, and like gets, you know, a lot of like culture and even like language and like songs and things that from Tali's childhood, even from Tali's mom. But she also gets the benefit of her cooking, which I cannot yet replicate. So some of her favorite foods are like Haitian dishes, like legumes, and she gets to spend a lot of time sort of in spaces where people are speaking Creole to each other and cooking Haitian food and listening to Haitian music. So she has a lot of those references in her mind, and she's constantly talking about like, you know, she'll come and she'll be like, hey, mama, I'm Haitian, right? I'm like, right. And she's like, and you're Haitian too, right? And so like we unpack like Abba's Haitian, which is what she calls my partner Tali. And you know, I'm American and Eritrean, and she's like, but I'm Eritrean too. I'm like, yep, yes, you're Eritrean. So she's constantly exposed to like different cultures within our house and outside. And we have the benefit of living in Brooklyn, which is like super diverse, and we have access to so many different resources. And I think just like, you know, the age of the internet, like she has books in Creole, she has books in Amharic. I found this whole line of books from the book you sent us, The Runaway Injera.
You had arrived.
That publishing company then like has like a whole bunch of other books on different topics, some of which we like didn't love the messaging and got rid of, but some that are really excellent and like, you know, talk about the 13 months of the calendar year in Ethiopia or like, you know, different regions and their histories. So she gets a lot of that. She gets, you know, unfortunately, like she has a lot of proximity to Tali's family. I have some family here in New York as well from my dad's side and my mom's side. So she gets to like experience, you know, family meals and like holidays with family from different traditions. And so like, around the end of the year holidays, we'll celebrate Christmas at home, but we'll have like an Ethiopian meal on Christmas Eve and like a, you know, more sort of, you know, like my mom's side of the family's traditions on Christmas Day. And so she sees and like understands that different cultures, you know, commemorate occasions differently, that there are different holidays in different parts of the world. But unfortunately, with COVID, she hasn't gotten to spend a lot of time with my immediate family. So she's, you know, 4 and a half, and she hasn't seen my parents since she was 2 and a half. No, 2, since she turned 2. So it's been 2.5 years. And, you know, luckily she gets to like FaceTime with them every day and have those moments with them. But it's just, there's no substitute for like in person. So, you know, she hasn't had like as much exposure. And I think in some ways, like, that lack of travel and ability to visit family has had a really big impact on our ability to transmit some of the language, especially. But But the culture we've been able to sort of supplement in other ways. But I think the language piece is what suffered the most, because I have these like very vivid memories of spending, you know, a month at a time with family members in this part of the world or that part of the world, and just like completely becoming fluent within a few weeks. And she hasn't had the benefit of that. But I think the culture we've infused, like the other day she was getting ready for school and she had picked out this one dress that she was going to wear that we ironed and everything, and she put it on and she was like, it's too tight. So she took it off and I said to her, okay, so what are you going to wear? And she was like, I'm going to wear my Habesha dress, which is her, her like Abyssinian. Habesha is the word in Amharic for Abyssinian, for that region of the world. So she was going to wear her Abyssinian dress. And so she wore it to school. And she's super proud to like tell all her friends where it's from and who, you know, who in her family is from there, and that she speaks the language, and like, she, you know, so and she, like, had been asking, you know, last weekend had been asking for Ethiopian food for like days. And finally on Friday, like after school, we like went and picked some up from the restaurant, and she was like super excited. So she's very family oriented, and also very like, as a result, sort of very tied into her, to the different aspects and elements of her various cultures. I don't know if that answered your question.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's just also really going to set a strong foundation for language learning, because there's such a connection between like personal identity, cultural identity, racial identity, and language learning. And I think, you know, it's any type of learning, it has to be grounded in motivation. Right. And so you're setting the foundation of like, even her saying, I speak the language, is her like affirming that that's a part of her identity. And so when she does have the opportunity to either hear it more in her own home environment or go and travel and hear it, she's going to be more receptive to that. And that, I think, is a really important part of the work around language learning that sometimes we don't consider, of like, what does it mean to tie this to a child's own personal identity and sense of self? And how can that set them up for sustaining language learning beyond the early years, where it may seem a little bit easier than going into the middle school years if they're growing up in a kind of monolingual society like the US, where it's harder to sustain fluency in that language that might have been established in the early
years. And I'm not even sure that we've done anything like deliberately different over the last couple of years. Maybe we have done some like overcompensating for, you know, COVID and being sort of stuck without, you know, access to family members from both sides. But I can very sort of clearly see the shift from like a couple of years ago when she would refuse to speak Amharic or French, or like refuse to even like have us speak either language to her at times, to now where she, like you said, she talks about being a speaker of that language, but she also goes around the house constantly like talking in gibberish, basically, that sounds like one or the other language. And now she's like newly obsessed with this show on PBS and is going around speaking Spanish. So there's that. <Yes. laughs>
That's awesome.
We were at the doctor's office the other day, and just as we were about to leave, I took her to the bathroom and I was like, okay, Tai Tai, are you ready to go? And she goes, claro que sí. And I was like, what? But the fact that like, no one is speaking Spanish in our house, right? She watches this show. She watches it in English, and sometimes she'll like watch it in Spanish. And she, like, from context clues and whatever, she knew exactly like what it meant, how to use it, when to use it, and she used it. And I thought like it just was a reminder that not exposing her and not teaching her is doing her a disservice, because she's the little sponge, you know?
Yeah, she is. And there's so many different like entry points in which information is being absorbed. So even through media, being kind of somewhat intentional about the media of showing diversity of different children and languages, and an acknowledgement of that is doing a world of work. And I also wanted to bring that up, like you were kind of critical in launching this really innovative program at Onward, which is the organization that you work at, that it launched during the height of COVID, a social justice homeschooling curriculum that's called Liberated. And that came out of having Thais at home and needing to have a homeschooling option for her during COVID. And just the lessons that you were doing for her were really transformative, awesome. And I think that you mentioned you just saw this exponential growth, not only in her own like sense of self and identity, but also academically, just her interest and rate and level of learning. And so I also wanted to kind of name that as something that you've been really intentional about, and ask, how do you do that? Like, how do you prioritize your child's learning in such an intentional way while you have a really busy life of like maintaining your own kind of personal wellness and your professional life and your friendships? It's a lot. So how do you go about doing that?
Well, I'm not sure that I am, but I guess like one of the things that was clear to me, like, it's funny, I've been thinking a lot about parenting. My sister is becoming a parent soon, and one of my best friends as well. And we've been talking a lot about like the kinds of things that you think about when you're about to become a parent. And I remember thinking a lot about my child and like who my child was going to be and what kind of person they were going to be. And like what our relationship was going to be like. And I think I thought that a lot of that would be driven by my child. And I think it is in a lot of ways, but I didn't spend a whole lot of time thinking about what kind of parent I wanted to be. Interestingly enough, like, I think I'm relatively self-aware and self-reflective, but I did not spend a whole lot of time thinking about like my parenting style and like all the different approaches to parenting there are, and like the schools of thought around development and like how and happiness and like the things you want to prioritize. And so I've been thinking a lot about that since becoming a parent, and since Thais has been, you know, old enough to sort of interact in a really meaningful way, which started a lot earlier than I thought it would. I think the more I thought about that, the more it felt like it was like there was no option other than doing what I thought would be like would afford her the most opportunities in life. And I think giving her as many access and like exposure to as many different things as possible is the like richest gift I can give her, the most wealth I can give her, you know, like giving her a million things to choose from and to like find herself in, I think is the biggest gift I can give her. And so I think, you know, the Homeschooling for Justice curriculum was, you know, I had nothing to do with developing it. I only had something to do with like the impetus for it, and also in delivering it with her, like going through the curriculum with her and learning with her. And like, even in doing that, I think I had a huge like mindset shift, because I was thinking initially that like my role was to teach her and like to be the person who had all the answers. And very quickly it became apparent that that just led to like power struggles and this like artificial, you know, like dynamic between us that wasn't helpful to her and didn't make learning fun for her. And when I literally started calling myself a learner with her, I'd be like, let's go learn together this morning. And that like created a completely different dynamic between us, and it like made everything more fun. And it also took the pressure off of me of like having to know everything, from having to know everything to like being able to just discover with her and learn with her. I think that the balance for me is still off in like prioritizing myself in the equation, but I feel like the most I've been able to do and the most I've been able to prioritize myself is like in little bits of self-care, because I want her to learn that like, I want her to learn the value of hard work and knowing that like things aren't supposed to come easy. Like if you're interested in things, then you have to work at them, and it takes effort and trial and error, and it takes a lot of failure before you get, you know, you figure things out. But I also want her to know that like life is not supposed to constantly be a grind. Like it's supposed to be enjoyed as well. And so I try to do little things for myself for her to see that I'm doing those little things for myself too. But more than anything, I think I try to like slow down when I'm with her, so that everything doesn't feel rushed and transactional. Because a lot of our time together, you know, she goes to like school now. And so, you know, it's like a play-based emergent kind of curriculum environment. So it's not like she's sitting at a desk, like being drilled with, you know, knowledge all day. So I think it feels leisurely and like relaxed when she's there. But I want like our time together you know, our morning routine, our commute to school, our pickup time, our like bedtime routine, all of those things to feel fun. And so we build in like a lot of play and a lot of like, you know, we use a lot of timers and like we separate our time into chunks so that she feels like, okay, right now, like I'm doing what I want. I'm playing, I'm like discovering, we're having fun. And, you know, even the sort of more functional parts of our day can also be fun, but like we make sure to build in a lot of fun. And because I want to transmit and I want to live the value of like playing and having fun with her.
I love that. And I think, you know, we definitely try to integrate that a lot too with our children around play, because I want them to have a positive relationship with the language and like associate positive feelings to it. So it's really not like we're, you know, this is a task that we are having now to learn this language or we're switching to this language, but rather we're doing something fun in this language. And it's not really like they're even thinking about it. It's just a part of their life. It's a part of the way that they're navigating the world. And I think that's not just with language, but anything that you're trying to teach a child, if it's reading, if it's science, if it's, you know, if it's math, that it is something that is sparking their curiosity and that they can find interest in and they can make connections to their world or their, you know, life, which takes work, right? Like it takes a lot of work to think about that. And that's why I think it's really important to have resources like the Liberated Homeschooling for Justice curriculum that kind of outlines that for families in a way that like they can pick it up and implement it. And it has been thought about in that kind of intentional way. And we're also at the Language Preservation Project creating some resources in Spanish because, you know, as a parent who's very interested in social justice for my child, was like, but how do I do this in Spanish? Where are the resources in Spanish? So that's something that we're working on as well, but just kind of making it a part of like everyday play. Yeah.
And I you know, you sort of mentioned the resources in Spanish, and I often feel like I wish I had more resources in Amharic. I've found more than I had before, but like, I wish there were more. I wish there were podcasts and things, and maybe there are, but like they're a lot harder to find. And you know, the thing that I struggle with the most is finding content in the languages that I want them to absorb it, that I want Thais to absorb, but that are like aligned with my sort of worldview and like what ideas I want her to learn. There was this one book specifically that I was thinking about in Amharic about this, like about Andromeda and the story of like this, you know, her being saved, and like the imagery even in the book is like this like big muscular burly guy saving this like woman whose hands are shackled above her head. And I was like, nope, not doing that. Like, I don't even care. Anything else about the story like is lost on us, because what's going to stick in her mind is this visual and this like this, you know, relationship dynamic. Mm-hmm. I don't want her to learn. I think finding content, and I think maybe you have the answer. Maybe the key is like creating content instead of trying to find it. But I think you're like the thing you were saying earlier about creating positive associations with the language and making language acquisition fun and almost secondary to the like to a central activity. Like, it's the parent's primary objective, but the child's primary entryway into language acquisition can and should be other things, right? So like right now, Thais is learning to skateboard, and I was watching her teachers, like they had the kids all on their skateboard. They were having a hard time sort of just standing on the board without like rolling away or getting distracted and like falling over on purpose or not. And so they had them passing these little like little hacky sacks almost back and forth to each other while standing on the board. And they completely forgot that they were standing on the boards. And at first they had these little hacky sacks like blocking the wheels on the board so that they couldn't roll around. And by the second class, they'd taken those off and they were completely stable. They were squatting on the board to pick up the thing when it fell. They were like laughing and playing and developing this like ease on the skateboard. And I just thought, like, I remember watching it and now hearing you talk about it, I can completely see the parallel of like doing things in a language versus like sitting down to learn a language or sitting down to learn to read rather than like reading a book that happens to be in another language, right?
And I also had this visual maybe in a few years of Thais doing a podcast in Amharic.
I would love it.
I just can imagine her like being a part of one of the like activities in Liberated. It's like, produce a podcast episode in, you know, one of your heritage languages. But I could see, you know, maybe not at this age, at 4 or 5 years old, but getting a little bit older, of having kids do things in this language and maybe starting to create some of these resources that aren't there. And I think it's also really important to know that, like, culture evolves and it's expansive. And if the resources and the, you know, what you see in the mainstream representation of that community doesn't fit your identity, it doesn't mean that you don't belong. It just means that you're different and that there maybe needs to be a shift in what is represented and shown.
I can totally see her recording that podcast. She was invited to be, to like create a video tutorial for kids on rest practice by one of our, one of the people we worked with recently to practice radical rest. And she's super pumped, and I can totally see her recording a podcast, maybe even like sooner than later.
We've got a platform here. She's
I will tell her. She might email you.
Yeah. It was so wonderful having you with us today, Tamar. Thank you so much. As we end our episode today, could you share with us just one thing that's bringing you joy these days?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me and having this conversation with me. It was super fun. And hopefully you welcome repeat guests, because I'd love to come back and have another conversation with you another time. What is bringing me joy these days? I think it's, so we're moving. We just closed on a new house, and I'm super excited for the start of a new chapter in our lives. And right now what is bringing me joy is like dreaming about all of the things that are going to come with this move and this new start, and the possibilities and the new traditions that we're going to start in this new home. And I think one of the big shifts is going to be around language, and I'm really excited about that.
Thanks, Tamar. This was really wonderful.
Thank you for listening. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project and sponsored by Onward. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara. And I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. We love hearing from you. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co, slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma, and remember, please subscribe or follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening right now. Help us grow our community and reach more families and educators by sharing this podcast or leaving a review. See you next episode.